What's up, gentlemen? This is Rising Phoenix Podcast, a podcast about how to rise up after your divorce. I'm your host, divorce coach, Michael Rhodes. Let's get into it. Joining me today is Dr. Erica Ellis. Erica, you've been on the show before, so we're just going to jump right into this. How do you tell kids that a divorce is happening? And so I guess this is sort of a two-parter. Does the age of the child make a difference in how you tell?
Well, first of all, great to be back. It's been a while, and it's great to see you. Talking to kids about a divorce might be the most important conversation you ever have with them, because in so many ways, it's going to lay the foundation for everything that's going to happen going forward. People could do this conversation really well and set a tone for the whole divorce and what happens afterwards, or they could do it really poorly and create a nightmare. And unfortunately, I've seen it go in that direction. And I'll give some examples of things not to say. But again, the goal is to create a positive foundation. And based on that, the first thing that I think is so important, if at all possible, is that the parents do this together. And that can be really difficult if it's very contentious and conflictual between the two people. But I think sitting down together with the kids with this conversation basically says, we are still here together as your parents. We are still going to be working on your behalf. And you could count on that no matter how hard it is. So doing it together is really the ideal, and if at all possible, to make that happen. It's hugely important to not lay blame on each other. And this is where I see the mistakes happening. You know,
Sure. If
your mother hadn't been sleeping with Joe, we never would have been getting divorced.
Right.
Or if your dad wasn't such an asshole or so mean or such a horrible parent, this never would be happening.
Yeah.
That may mean a immediate need for you, but it is going to be devastating for your kids. And it's going to start things off in a way that the kids are going to be stuck in the middle, and they will be stuck there forever. So trying to do it together, trying not to lay blame, you know, to say something like, we don't love each other anymore the way a mom and dad should. Or you've noticed that there's more arguing going on in the house. And we're not happy. You guys aren't happy. And because of that, we've decided to split up and get a divorce. And to speak to the second part of this question, clearly the age of your kids matters, right? Cool. I mean, a younger kid is not going to understand it in a way an older kid is. And often I will suggest to people, if there's a big age difference, talk to your kids separately. You know, Gotcha. Like if you have a 4-year-old and a 12-year-old, it's a very different conversation. So I think it's really helpful to do it separately if there is a big age range, and then talk to your kids in an age appropriate way. You know, little kids, you could say, you know, you've had friends that you might have arguments with and you're not getting along anymore, and you decide that you don't want to be friends anymore. Sometimes
Right.
that happens with mommy and daddies, you know,
right.
And they're just not getting along, and they can't live together anymore in the same way you can't be friends with somebody. So, you know, you tailor it at the level that a kid could understand. I think the timing is super important also. You know, parents often say, like, what's the perfect time to tell my kid?
Right.
There's no perfect time, but it's kind of that Goldilocks thing. Like, you don't want to, you know, not too little, not too late. You know, you want to, there is kind of a sweet spot. And I think if you tell your kids like 6 months in advance that we're getting divorced, and then you're together for 6 months before anything happens, then you actually make a physical split. Everybody's living in this limbo, right? They're always waiting, wondering, when is it going to happen?
Sure.
I think if you tell them the day before somebody's moving out, that also doesn't give them enough time to process it and be ready. So I usually say to people like a month. I mean, obviously it's not in stone, but
sure.
You know, 4 weeks gives kids time to process it, to ask questions, to try to understand it, to come to terms with it. But it's not too much time to be sitting with it. You know, I also get the question, should I do it, you know, on a Friday night as opposed to a Sunday afternoon? Yeah. Right. I mean, you know, if you could give your kids a couple of days to process it before they have to go to school, that's great. You know, if you could do it, you know, at some point that there's a long holiday weekend, you know, that there's even a little more time before they have to get into their life again. You know, I think to be sensitive to giving them, you know, time to process it. I also just did this blog about, you know, should you wait till after Christmas, right? It's kind of timely now, right?
Sure.
And, you know, actually January is the month that parents, adults most seek out divorce attorneys because they tend to wait till after the holidays. But, you know, in terms of the timing of that, I would say if you can't do the holidays in a peaceful way, and it's going to be a hellish last memory of holiday together, do not stay together for the sake of the children. Tell them before and have separate celebrations. If you could do it in a peaceful way and, you know, it's not constant fighting, then wait and give your kids one last, you know, peaceful holiday. So I think there are all kinds of, you know, timing issues about this, but...
Sure. What about the scenario where you're the one that is shouldered with telling them? Or, yeah, I guess if you're the one who, you know, mom splits, dad splits, how do you handle that? What do you, I mean, I know you don't want to badmouth the other party, the mother, in the case of my audience, or the majority of my audience, but what do you say? Like, what do you say if mom splits?
And you don't have the opportunity to sit together and talk about it.
Correct. Yeah.
I mean, I think in that situation, the biggest challenge is not to badmouth the mom, right?
Sure.
But I think if the mother is still somebody that's going to be in the kids' lives, you know, you want to try to protect that relationship and not, you know, the kids are going to be devastated enough that the mother has disappeared, has split, right? And, you know, I think you could acknowledge to your kids how hard this is. Wow. I wish we were able to have this conversation together, but you know, mom isn't here. So I'm going to do the best I can to explain this to you. You know, we haven't been happy. Things haven't been good. And maybe the way things ended hasn't been the best. You know, I think you could say that rather than, you know, I can't believe the horrible way your mom has handled this, you know, but to acknowledge the pain of what they're going through without lowering yourself to being in the position of badmouthing her, because they see what happened, right? They're going to draw their own conclusions. If you draw that conclusion for them, they're going to get angry at you.
Yeah, it's a tricky sort of line to toe. But I think the truth always comes out, usually, you know, in various ways, but it always comes out. And I think it's worse if it comes from you, right? Let them figure it out, especially at when they're, even if it's when they're adults, eventually they're going to figure it out and see the evidence and put the pieces together. And so it's not upon you, I don't think, to point out what will become obvious anyway.
I absolutely agree, because if you do, they're going to be resentful towards you, right? If they figure that out, which it's not hard to figure out if mom's disappeared, right? But it's still their mom, and they are going to be defensive if it comes from you.
Yeah, true.
You know,
so once you get that piece done, there's obviously the question of dating, and I want to first approach it with the question of, how long before you're dating someone should you introduce your children? And then we'll get to some of the other messier stuff, but that one's a pretty easy one, or seemingly easier one than some of the other scenarios. How long before you have a person and you've been dating, what period of time before you introduce the kids?
Well, I think the basic rule should be that kids should not be introduced to new significant others until that relationship, and we could talk about how you define it, but until that relationship is long-term and committed. Sure. Because the last thing you want for your kids is to have multiple people coming in and out of their life when it doesn't work out for you, right? You know, you're dating somebody and, you know, you think it's going well, and like a month in, you're like, oh, I'm ready for my kids to meet them. And then 3 months later, you're like, yeah, it's not really what I thought it was going to be. And now the kids have another loss, right? There's so much instability that they're already dealing with. You don't want to give even the slightest chance of them having to deal with more loss. So, you know, I mean, people say, how long is that? You know, is that 6 months? Is it a year? Right. I mean, some people put that in their, you know, divorce decree as a stipulation, right? True. You know, you have to wait 6 months. But to me, it needs to be long-term and it needs to be committed. And there can't be a revolving door of people coming in and out. And I also suggest that you don't start introducing new people until you're actually divorced. Like kids, especially older kids who understand that, like, wait a minute, you're still married to dad. Like, why are you dating somebody else?
Yeah.
And people don't like that rule, you know, because often marriages end because there's somebody else in the picture.
Very true.
And they're anxious to have that new person in their kid's life. But I think I would be super, super cautious about bringing somebody in before a divorce is actually final. And it's also going to infuriate your ex, which is only going to further antagonize any relationship that you still have and further compromise any ability for the two of you to co-parent, right? So we're trying to maintain that relationship as much as possible, hoping that these, you know, the parents are able to go forward in some positive way. So I think the slow piece is super, super important.
Yeah. So what if you're the other side of that equation and mom is churning through guys, and I'm not saying that to be antagonistic or,
No, it happens.
But it happens. So what do you do to provide stability, or, you know, how do you handle that?
Well, I think that you don't handle it by telling your kids, oh, I can't believe your mom is doing this. What, she's got another boyfriend?
Right.
You know, I think that the one thing to remember is one is enough. Like, if only one of you does things in an appropriate way, one is better than none, right?
Yeah.
So because the mother is doing that, don't take that as permission for you to do that. And I think that often happens, right? Well, she's doing it, so what the hell? You know, I'll do it, and I'll introduce the kids. And at least you have an opportunity to be a role model for doing something more appropriate rather than lowering yourself to the same level of how your ex is doing it, right?
Right, yeah.
So, I think at all costs to avoid the bad mouthing, to avoid lowering yourself to the same level, and be a role model of better behavior.
Can we talk specifically about what happens to a child when you badmouth the other parent? Like, what is that, like, as specific as we can get? Everyone's different and all that kind of stuff, and every scenario and gender and age and all that. But what is it that occurs in a child's mind that is damaging when you badmouth the other parent?
Yeah, I mean, that is such a great question, because everybody says don't do it, but you know, maybe really understanding what the potential damage is. I think the damage is that it's an absolutely impossible situation for a child to have to choose between two parents that they love. And when a parent is bad-mouthing the other parent, they either need to accept it as truth, and then they feel like they're angry at the other parent for what they're being told they did, right? Or they don't believe it's true. And there's the risk of the parent who's giving them that information being angry at them for not accepting it. So they're in this no-win position of no matter what they do, one of their parents is not going to be happy with them. And it's the most impossible choice for a child to make when they have two parents that they love and two parents that love them. And bad-mouthing puts them in that place. Asking them to keep secrets puts them in that place, right? This is another scenario of what how people often do like the dating introductions wrong. You know, they'll keep running, you know, every time the parent goes somewhere with the kid, this woman shows up, right? Like, oh, look, we ran into Mary again at mini golf, or we ran into Mary at the ice cream. And you know, the dad doesn't say, oh, this is my new friend. It's just like, oh, what a coincidence that she keeps showing up, right?
Yeah.
But then the kid has this information. The kids are not stupid. They're like, oh, I wonder who this woman is. I wonder if this is dad's new girlfriend. And then they're like, oh, but do I tell mom? Can I, you know, so the kids become a secret keeper. You know, the parents are sort of inadvertently asking the kids to keep a secret. Or even sometimes, you know, the parent will specifically say, hey, here, this is my new girlfriend. Don't tell mom. Like, how is that a win for the kid? Like, what do they do? What happens when mom says, hey, have you met any of your dad's new friends? And now what does the kid do? Right? If they tell the mom the truth, dad's going to be mad.
Right.
If they lie, they're at the risk of mom being mad, right? So it puts them in these no-win positions that no matter what they do, one of their parents is going to be mad at them. And that's horrible, horrible.
Yeah, I just, it makes me stop and think about how difficult it is. Not only for obviously the people that are going through it, if it wasn't your idea, but how difficult it is for the children. Like it feels like there's no winning, but I'm sure we'll kind of get to some sort of success stories and things of that nature, or at least, you know, some of the positive maybe that can come from this, but sometimes it just feels like a no win all the way around for everybody. And I honestly think even for the ones that decided to leave, like, I think they think that it's a victory or success or whatever, but I don't think it's that simple. I think there's no winners in a divorce.
Well, it's never easy, but you could do it well and you could do it really poorly. And, you know, if you do it well, there's a chance of that everybody's resilience is going to pull them through. But if you do it poorly, that resilience is getting knocked down every day, you know? I love acronyms. Like, I came up with this acronym for the whole introduction thing. And I came up with this thing that's called STOPP, STOPP. Okay. So the first is slow. We talked about go slow. The T is tell your ex. Now, people balk at this, right? Like, why do I need to tell them? It's none of their business.
Right.
Well, you need to tell them for a couple of reasons, because it's going to get the kids out of the position of having to lie.
True.
Right? They could become an ally in helping the kids adjust. True. And they're going to want the same thing, or you're going to want the same thing when they start dating. Right.
True.
I mean, if the ex-wife starts dating, I would say 99% of the ex-husbands are going to want to know. Right. So I think, you know, imagine yourself in that position. So go slow. Tell your ex. The O is only share what's important. Like, don't overshare. There has to be a boundary between adult business and kid business. Right.
True.
You don't have to tell them every detail of every date and, oh, we're, you know, while you were at your mom's, she slept over. Like, no. Right. The first P is when you start dating, make sure you preserve quality time with your kids. Don't have every visit that they come over to spend time with you with the new girlfriend. The kids will resent her.
Yeah.
They will be threatened by it. They will feel like they're losing you. And you don't want to do that. And the second P is to be patient. Like, you love this person by the time, hopefully, you've introduced the kids, but she's a stranger to them. So give the kids time. Don't push it. Don't force it. You know, be patient that it's going to take time for a relationship to develop. So that STOPP thing can be very helpful to just have a framework, right? To sure. go slow, tell your ex, only share what's important, preserve quality time, and be patient.
All challenges, but all doable, right? And all important. Because at the end of the day, you know, I think the most important thing is to preserve the children and their mental health as best you can. Obviously, this is challenging, so why heap any more challenges on them? That said, sometimes the challenges, most often probably, are the other side. And I've seen and heard, you know, I run a Facebook group for men going through divorce. There's I have help, 7,000 men in this group. So I see and hear a lot of different things. And, you know, it's obviously one side of the story, but sometimes I see things like the ex or soon to be ex-wife has a new boyfriend already, perhaps because that was what, you know, was the wedge that led to divorce or whatever. And sometimes the young child will be sort of persuaded, pressured to call this new partner dad. Now, obviously, this is done for nefarious reasons. Nothing good is coming from it. But when you're in that position, and let's say it's a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, and they say, yeah, mommy and my new dad, or something of that nature. I haven't had that happen. My ex did date for a little while with someone fairly serious. It didn't work out. Didn't break my heart any, but what do you do in those circumstances? Like, how do you, obviously you don't want to, well, how do you handle it? I mean, there's things not to do, but yeah. I mean, we could cover those too, but how, you know, what do you do?
Well, first of all, that's terrifying, right? I mean, and it's heartbreaking for any parent to hear that. Yeah. And, you know, I think I would tell every person who's listening to this that the most important thing is to remember, no matter what your kid is calling some other person who just came into their life, that nobody is going to take your place. And that is such an important thing to hold on to, right? Yes. I mean, yes. You don't want anybody with that title other than you, but that title doesn't automatically produce the relationship that you have with your children, right? Very true. So I think that's the most important thing to start with. I mean, obviously trying to have a conversation with your ex that's child focused, you know, not so much like, you know, what the hell is wrong with you for doing this and, you know, being contentious about it. But let's talk about how confusing this is going to be for Sammy, you know, yeah. Like, you know, to try to have that conversation and maybe also say, and what's it going to feel like for you when they start calling my new significant other mom? Right. I mean, you know, hopefully you're not going to do that out of spite, because that gets back to the one is better than none. But to sort of, you know, try to get at that perspective for your ex, but just to talk about it from a child-centered perspective, like, this is going to be so confusing for the kids. And to be able to, you know, to acknowledge that having a relationship with that person is going to be important for your kids, and that you're not, it's not that you don't want them to, your kids to have a relationship with that person, right? And sometimes you don't, but I think it is important to accept that it's going to be in your kids' best interest to have a relationship with your ex-wife's significant other. It is going to be in their best interest. Sure. It's going to be in your best interest to get along with that person too, right? Right. But, you know, to be able to say, this isn't about my not wanting your new person to be in Joey's life. I want Joey to love them and to have a relationship. But the dad thing is just, it's really hurtful. And I think it would be for you. And I think it's going to be really confusing for the kids.
Yeah. And what do you say to the child? Like, what do you say? What are you, you know, don't, do you say like, you know, I'm the only dad that you have, or, you know, don't call him dad. Like, how do you handle that?
Well, I think that's a really fine line, because I think that's putting the child in the middle, because their mom is telling him to do one thing, you're telling them to do another thing, then it's a no-win for them. I would maybe talk to them about, like, what does that feel like for you to be asked to call somebody else dad? And, you know, if your kid says, it's really hard, but mommy wants me to do it, I might encourage your child to say, why don't you try to talk to mommy about that? And then I think if you have any kind of relationship with your ex, for you to try to have the conversation in that non-conflictual way, but as co-parents trying to say, our kid is struggling, what do we do? How do we make it better?
And how important is therapy for a child throughout this process?
Well, I think it could be incredibly helpful. I mean, honestly, I think every kid could benefit from it when their parents are going through a divorce. And even in this situation, you know, when the child says to the therapist, this is the most horrible thing. My mom's asking me to call her new boyfriend dad. I don't know what to do. Now you have a therapist that also could talk to mom and say, your kid's really struggling here. And this probably is not something that's fair to them to ask them to call somebody other than their dad. You know, so you have, there's another advocate supporting your child. So yeah, especially if it's a relationship that the co-parents are not working well with each other and can't communicate well with each other, having a therapist involved can be so helpful to bridge that gap.
Yeah. So in the sort of same vein, if there is a lot of negative comments, you're sort of getting back channel, you know, mommy said this, or, you know, mommy said you could do this, or how do you handle those types of things? Like, what do you say to, you know, negative comments that are coming in from the other side? How do you handle that?
Well, I think it's the same basic rules, right? You don't want to put the child in the middle by making some nasty comment about their mother. You know, you might say something like, what's that like to hear mom say that? Go ahead.
Yeah, sounds like being curious about their experience is really, really important.
It's super important to give them a voice, to give them a place to share what it is that they're feeling. And then you could hopefully take some of that information as a good co-parent and share that, as opposed to, you know, sending out a our family wizard message like, what the hell is wrong with you making those kind of comments to Joey? Right. But to be able to say, Joey shared with me today that he feels really stuck and hurt and upset when those kinds of things get said. I think that's a great way to frame it, that curiosity and giving your kids a chance to talk about it and not lowering yourself to that same level. It's so tempting. There's so much painful emotion swirling around that our emotions get us to do and say things that end up being for our kids, right?
Oh yeah. I've been guilty of making, not to this extent, that extent, I don't think, probably micro aggressions or whatever, like micro comments. I try my best, but I'm sure stuff leaks out. But it's hard. It's all hard. I mean, especially like I said, if it's not your idea, not your doing, it's incredibly hard. The outcome of your children is paramount, and I say that, you know, I've made many mistakes for sure, especially in the beginning. Oh, I was angry. I was very, very angry.
Yeah.
I tried not to attack her outwardly, specifically or whatever. But I am sure that some stuff came out of it for sure.
You can't be perfect, right?
No, no one is. But I wanted to talk about something just popped in my head. Things like parent-teacher conferences. I do mine separate. As I started that initially because I was angry, and now I just feel like that's my house and that's her house, and, you know, she's going to do things her way, I'm going to do things my way. But perhaps I'm wrong on that. How do you recommend those types of things? Doctor appointments, obviously, I try to be at all of those. But I think specifically parent-teacher conferences with schools. How do you think that should be handled?
Yeah. Is that with kids there or kids not there?
Kids not there.
Okay. You know, if at all possible, I think it probably is better to both of you be there and sure. hear the same thing, because I think sure. that there's always room when you've had two separate meetings to have two separate interpretations.
That just happened with me. So that's kind of why I'm asking.
Yeah. And you could walk away with two totally different conclusions and plans about what needs to happen. So if you're able to, and you're able to hear the same thing, I think there's some benefit to that. You know, if it's hard to sit in the same room together without, you know, bickering with each other and making snide comments, which maybe at the beginning for you it was, and yes. for her it was, you know.
For me, I don't know about her, but for me.
Yeah, you know, it's probably better under those circumstances to not do it together, right? But I, you know, I don't think you're damaging your children by what you're doing. But there's, like you said, you just saw it happen. There's a danger of walking away with a totally different interpretation of what you heard and what needs to happen going forward.
Yeah. What about birthday parties, things of that nature? Should you do joint ones? Can you do, is it, you know, I mean, I do, we do separate, but again, as time has gone on, you know, I think we've talked about my little one, mainly she's 9, talking about maybe next year we'll do a joint one. You know, she actually sort of brought it up. And I'm okay with it at this point. I can be around her now and it's fine. In fact, she was in my home, the marital home. She left. She was in the, when was it? 2 days ago. I had to take my oldest somewhere, clarinet lessons, and she came and stayed with my little one 'cause she was a little bit sick. So I'm past where I can't be around her. But if is that best practice, so to speak, if you can, should you do those together?
You know what? I don't think it's necessarily best practice. I mean, if it's something that's super important to your child and you can do it in a way that's not going to be full of conflict, I think that would be great. I mean, I think the rule is always if you're going to be exposing your kids to conflict, then you absolutely should not do it. Because the single greatest predictor of how your kids are going to fare is the amount of conflict that they're going to be exposed to. Right. So you want to minimize that at all costs. If you could do this together, great. You know, if your kids aren't asking for it and you've kind of created your separate things, that's fine. But there will probably be times that you will have to be together. You know, I mean, when your kids eventually get married, you know, or, you know, college graduations. I mean, there are times that you will be together. And you know, I could tell you from my own experience, you know, I went through this as a kid with two parents that hated each other and never figured out how to work it out. My wedding was an issue, you know, like, and it was like 20 years after my parents were divorced and they didn't want to be together and they didn't want to walk me down the aisle and they didn't want to sit with each other. And there was an issue of who was going to be on the invitation. I mean, and then when my son was born, which was probably, I don't know, 25 years after my parents were divorced, I literally said to my father, don't come to the hospital today because mom is here and I don't think she's going to be comfortable having you there. Now, that was so messed up for so many reasons that I was still protecting her. I still thought that was my role. I was taking one of their sides over the other. Like, they both should have been there. And, you know, I defended that, you know, I was 30 hours in labor in a C-section, and I was still maybe delirious, but that was like the craziest decision I've ever made. And it was because they never figured out how to be together in the same room. So
is that why you do what you do?
It is why I do what I do. Yeah. You know, it took me years in a therapist's office to work through all the shit that they created for me. And I am committed and passionate about trying to help other parents not make the mistakes. Because my parents made them all. And they were loving, wonderful parents. Like, they were great people. They weren't like narcissists or, you know what I mean? They were they were great people. They loved us. But they there was so much pain, in terms of how things ended, that they never worked on their own stuff. You know, they never healed, really. All the animosity and pain just played out constantly. You know, every time I came home from college, it was like, you're going to go to your dad's house? No, you've got to come here. This is your real house. Right. I mean, that kind of stuff, as opposed to, yeah, you got two houses, like, go wherever it makes sense. I was 20 years old, you know, but I was still like stuck in the middle. So those are the mistakes that could take a lifetime to heal.
So I guess, I mean, you know, you spent time working on it, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. That was the position you were put in, and you handled it. So I guess that says that there are potentially good outcomes, like divorce. I guess I'm maybe trying to give some hope to guys that maybe even myself in some ways, because what I worry about more than anything is that this is going to damage my children for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to do my best, and I'm definitely, you know, I'm getting better, and I had a lot of failings early on, but is this, it sounds like you were able to work through some stuff, but can kids get over is the right phrase, but can they be okay after this, or are they going to inevitably have their own relationship struggles and go through their own divorces and then thus, you know, sort of perpetuate the pain?
Right. Well, I guess the best answer is it increases the chances of them having long-term problems. No doubt about that. But, you know, like I said, I got a lot of help, but I worked through a lot of that stuff, you know, and some, you know, children who go through a painful, contentious divorce may need help. And it goes back to your question, you know, is it good to have my kid in therapy? Yeah, because the help could start early on. But sure, there's hope. I mean, my parents like screwed so many things up and I had a lot of challenges, but they were loving parents who I had that. Yeah. And, you know, they were there for me in so many ways. And hey, I just celebrated my 34th wedding anniversary.
Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. So it's possible, right, to go through all of that and still come out the other side and be resilient. But it makes it harder. Yeah. And you could spare your kids a lot of angst and emotional turmoil by doing it, the divorce, in a better way, doing it in a child-centered way, thinking about how is what I'm about to say going to affect them, you know, that it can't just be getting my needs met and expressing my anger. It has to be thinking about the impact that it's going to have on your children.
I want to shift a little bit. Again, things pop in my head all the time. In terms of custody, do you have recommendations? Or, I mean, obviously everyone shoots for 50-50, but there's so many variations and, you know, week on, week off, 2-2-3, 5-2-7-9-4-6-7-3, Jenny, whatever. What is there? And obviously age is a factor, but can you speak to that? Is there recommended schedules that are best?
Yeah. Well, age is a huge factor, right? Yeah. I mean, I think the younger children need more regular contact with both parents. You know, like if someone would say that, well, we're thinking of doing a week on and a week off with our 2- and 4-year-old, I would say that's a horrible plan.
Yeah.
Because a week for a 2- and 4-year-old is like a month to a 10-year-old, right?
Yeah.
So I think the age is huge. Yeah. And the older the kids are, the more they're able to tolerate longer periods of time away, right?
Gotcha.
Beyond that, I think it's really important to take into consideration the realities of your life. Like, I oftentimes, you know, parents are fighting for 50-50, yet one of the parents travels all the time. So it's like, okay, how are you going to do 50-50 when you're gone half the time? Or, you know, one of the parents is on call, like, you know, for a lot. So I think, you know, in making a parenting plan, you need to take into account the kid's age and the realities of your life. And don't just get caught up in the, it has to be 50-50 because that's what feels equal. But what's going to actually work in your life and in the realities of your life, right? Yeah. And, you know, if one of the spouses is a teacher and they're off all summer, you know, it makes sense for kids to spend the day when the other parent is working with the parent that's home. But sure. But parents get kind of crazy about that sometimes, like, well, that's not fair.
Right.
Okay, well, it might not seem fair from your perspective, but how about from your kid's perspective? Like, right. Don't you think they'd rather be with one of their parents than in some, you know, daycare situation, if that's possible? So take that into reality, into account, the realities of your life. And honestly, Michael, I think the most important thing about any visitation plan is that it's followed consistently. Whatever you establish, stick to it. Whatever you decide is going to happen, make it happen. You know, yes, stuff comes up and they're, you know, you can't 100% of the time, but, yeah. You know, the kid, you picture the kid sitting at the window and waiting for their mom to show up for a visit. And, you know, she shows up 3 hours late or doesn't show up at all because the kid knows this is the time that mom's supposed to be here. That's devastating.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So whatever yeah. you agree to, try to stick to it as much as humanly possible.
So for my own selfish purposes, I'm going to ask, at what age do you think week on, week off is ideal? Because I have a 9 and a 14-year-old. I don't think the 9-year-old is quite ready for week on, week off. And because of my work and my travel, sometimes gets in the way. And she's very flexible, thank the Lord or Buddha or whoever, Tom Cruise, that she allows me to make up my time, but it does become difficult from time to time. At what age is week on, week off okay?
Yeah, I mean, probably for the 14-year-old, it is. You know, I think when they start to get to that teenage years, I would think a 9-year-old girl not seeing their mom all week would be really hard. But, you know, there's also sort of intermediate steps, right? So, you know, if you did a 1 week on, 1 week off to build in maybe, you know, a dinner once or twice a week, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think there's ways when the child is on the cusp of that starting to be okay, but it still might feel like a little too long, you know, to just build something in midweek. Or, you know, the mom could come to a soccer game and, you know, and see the kid. I mean, there's usually opportunities, even, you know, if one parent custodially has the kids sleeping at their house, you know, to see them at some other point.
Yeah, that leads me to one more question, then we'll get to the final question, and then we'll touch on how to get in touch with you and find all your good stuff. It's stuff like lessons, practices, you know, whatever it is, piano, horseback riding, you know, clarinets, like how important is it for parents to be at those things, even if it's a routine, like practice, like soccer practice or whatever? How important is it for me? I feel like I try to be, if I can be there, I'm going to be there, period. Like that's important to me. But some folks think the routine, you don't need to go. Your soccer practices, nah, I don't need to, you know. How do you view that?
Well, I think it's the same for divorced parents as non-divorced parents. You know, I think as much as parents could be involved and present and supported in their kids' lives, I think it's to their kids' benefit. I think that's the way we show that we care and we're concerned and we love them and we want to be part of their lives. You know, can we be there for everything? No. But, you know, I've had kids sit in my office and say, you know, My dad never cared about anything. They never showed up for a single game. And there's like a hole in their heart because of that, you know? So I think it's awesome you do as much as you do. And I'm sure your kids feel that. And, you know.
I think so. I think so. I mean, I feel like there's never any comments like, oh, you don't come to this or you don't come to that. I feel like they see that, you know. And I mean, I don't ask or, you know, but I don't ever get the sense that I get the sense that they're glad that I come to all those things.
I can't imagine that they're not. And if you have a parent on the other side who's bad mouthing you, but your kids have the evidence of what they see in reality,
Very true.
you know, you're leading by example. You know, if the mother says, you know, your dad's a deadbeat, he never does anything with you kids, your kids know the reality,
Yeah, true.
right?
Yeah, very true. I mean that's the way I feel, and I assume that that was the sort of you know, that's the best practice, but you know, other folks have other opinions. But I always like to talk to folks like you that have, you know, you're trained, you're you know, you'd have the knowledge and obviously the practice, and that to hear that from someone who knows what they're talking about means a lot more than some random person on the internet.
Sure,
So thank you.
you're doing good, Michael.
I'm trying, I'm trying. So the last question, as I know, I don't know, it's been a while since you've been on, but the last question I ask everybody is, what words of wisdom would you impart to a man who's just starting his divorce journey?
Well, that it's not an easy process. It gets easier over time, and there are ways in which you need to take care of yourself so you could best take care of your children. And working on your own issues and not letting your own pain and your own anger get in the way is going to be the best gift you could ever give to your children.
Okay, I couldn't agree more. And I speak from experience that it's not easy, but it is important to try and handle it as best we can. So how can people find you you know, get in touch with you? And I know you have I think you have a new website, if I remember correctly, you have different programs, if I remember correctly. How can people get in touch with you?
So we've kind of rebranded over the last couple of years. And my website is now called Two Healthy Homes, TWO, Two Healthy Homes, which of course is the goal to create two healthy homes. The website honestly is chock full of so much information.
Awesome.
There, I put out blogs a couple of times a month. There are just pages and pages of resources on there, in terms of a lot of the stuff we've talked about today and way beyond that, like every kind of issue you could imagine, I've written something about. So there's a lot of resources. And basically what I'm providing is all kinds of support in different ways. So I have parenting education classes.
Nice.
I offer help developing parenting plans, you know, rather than fighting it out with the two lawyers to sit with me, who is very child focused and trying to help the parents say, okay, given our kids' age and given the realities of our life, what's going to be in their best interest in terms of a parenting plan? So, you know, again, the one-to-one coaching, two to
Nice.
one coaching, you know, I do work, co-parenting work. So I'm just trying to offer a variety of resources to help people get through this in the best possible way, and to do everything they can. Obviously, my greatest goal is to help protect the kids, but working with the parents to be better co-parents is the best way to be able to help the children.
Yeah, agreed. Well, I think you're doing an awesome service, I highly recommend everyone check it out. Thank you, as always, you know, for doing this and doing it again. I really, really appreciate it. We'll definitely stay in touch, and definitely have to do it again because these questions, they and new things always come up. So, thank you so much for
Happy
doing it.
to do it anytime.
All right. Take care.
All right, Michael, you be well.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Thank you so much for watching and or listening. Since my separation in July of 2019, I have done an incredible amount of work on myself. I've had many different therapists, life coaches, and went through different programs. I've taken all that I've learned and put it into my own program called Forged by Fire. If you are interested in having me help you navigate your divorce, please hit my website, risingphoenixdivorcecoach.com. I look forward to working with you.